to Glow in the Dark.
Glow in the Dark. Glow in the Dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. Now, I have a very different sort of show for you this week. There is no science fiction on this show, because I'm wondering what you would like to hear next. So I've got a survey I'm putting up. I want to talk about that. There's also the chance for you to get a free audiobook. So if you're missing out on something this week, have no fear. You can get a whole audiobook. But I'm also going to bring you some nonfiction. It's what I hope is my take on an enlightened agnostic point of view, I suppose. It's my new pamphlet or book called The Seduction of Certainty. And there's probably something to piss off everybody out there. Scientists, religious people, politicians, media people, yep. I hope you'll check it out. It's coming up. That is The Seduction of Certainty in its entirety. It is now out as an ebook and as an audiobook and as a paperback, flimsy pamphlet kind of thing. It's not very long, so you'll hear it in its entirety on this show. Although in a very different presentation, of course, than you get it as an audiobook at Audible. But before I get to that, I do want to talk about stuff that might interest you more if you're into science fiction. And that is the survey that's going on. We have reached the end, chronologically, of Alibi Jones's Adventures by finishing up with Alibi Jones' Christmas Present last week. So I want to know what you would like to hear next. Now, I do have new takes on Alibi Jones' Blind Eye and Alibi Jones' In Over His Head that have been done for the new Six Short Stories audiobook. So those are newly rewritten, readapted from the comic book scripts, and newly recorded. Then there's a new re-recording of Father's Day. But, you know, I didn't want to just assume you would want to hear those, and having been going in chronological order, well, you know, I kind of feel like we're done, and we can just choose something now. So I've got a survey up. If you go to glowintheDarkRadio.com or MikeLuoma.com, right there at the front of the page, top of the page, it says, take the survey, just click on that. That'll take you to the SurveyMonkey page. And you will get a free audiobook out of it. The last question asks for your email address and for which audiobook you'd like. And then I'll send you that in an email. So I hope you'll go there and take the survey. That's again at MikeLuoma.com, MikeLuoma.com, or GlowInTheDarkRadio.com, GlowInTheDark, GlowInTheDarkRadio, radio, RADIO.com. You know, as soon as I posted the survey, I saw somebody respond right away. I believe it was Keith Hughes responding right away. And I think he picked Vatican Ambassador. Because, you know, they tell you right off, boom. Hey, you got a survey response. And I'm kind of inclined to think Vatican Ambassador might be the best thing to do. Because I feel like the last time we were presenting Vatican Ambassador, we kind of stopped in the middle to move on to other things, and I'm not sure we ever completed it. And I don't think it would make sense to just, you know, start that from the start. But it might be cool to get into Vatican Ambassador and see who we can hook into the rest of the series, you know? I'm just thinking. And thinking out loud, I suppose. Remember, you can support this podcast on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio and get all the details. be great to have your support. And thank you for those who already do support this podcast. You've already gotten a free audiobook. We're going to hear from the folks from the Melting Podcast next. And then, as I said, something to, I think, piss off everyone. The Seduction of Certainty, my new nonfiction pamphlet release. You'll hear it next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
What are you doing in the kitchen?
Writing a short story.
With a meat mallet?
Well, yeah. My characters are giving me trouble.
Well, then what about the cheese grater?
I have to make sure my plot points are evenly spread through the whole story, don't I? Oh, my action scene is done.
Wow, you got it perfectly browned.
350 degrees for 12 minutes. Perfect.
The Melting Podcast, a writing variety show featuring a little of everything from everyone, everywhere. Short and flash fiction, author interviews, book reviews, and more. Come visit the Disaster Kitchen and cook up a story. Something's burning.
My dialogue!
This is the nonfiction piece, The Seduction of Certainty, on Glow in the Dark Radio. The Seduction of Certainty, a new way of looking at faith, knowledge, science, religion, politics, and the media. This book is a work of opinion and philosophy. Your mileage may vary. Dedicated to all seekers. Ta-da! Astronomers proudly displayed their blurry orange-yellow first true image of a black hole for all the world to see, along with explaining how cool it was using synchronized, far-flung radio telescopes to create an effectively Earth-sized telescope to capture the image. Came a collective sigh of scientific relief that Einstein was right. Since Einstein, science had theorized and calculated the existence of black holes, but we'd never actually seen one. Physicists and astronomers had figured out they should exist. But as much as they might not like this pointed out, until now, the existence of black holes was a matter of scientific faith. So, are knowledge and faith incompatible? Short answer, no. In fact, modern science is full of faith. Most of all, it's full of faith in the human mind's ability to encompass reality. Ironically, this has led science to a limited, incomplete understanding of the human mind. Or perhaps it's not irony. For how can a thing encompass itself? Only now is science even trying to come to grips with the idea human consciousness might exist as something beyond the mere chemical processes going on in the brain. Well, some are. Others are certain the brain is it. Science falters when it believes in its own certitude, as any belief system does. Certainty is an illusion, but we crave it. We crave that sense of certain knowledge. Our human lives are so chaotic, the nature of the universe so often incomprehensible, human emotions and interactions so fraught. If some system seems to explain it all and offers the soul a sense of certitude, the warmth and comfort in that sense of certainty, however true or false, gives the soul a sense of having found an answer, a home, a love. Religions offer certainties. Spiritual systems claim to explain the unseen universe that impacts our own. Science offers up its own certainties, and in explaining the observable world, rejects with its own certainty any impacts on that observable world by forces it cannot mathematically encompass and reproduce. Those it can reproduce, all the while discarding the few results that don't support their models, that's allowed. It presents to the world as certainty. These are facts. and while claiming to believe in only the observable and reproducible, mathematical proofs of scientific models are often granted the same weight and sense of certitude as observed ones. In fact, that orange and yellow picture of a black hole? It's not an actual picture, per se. According to reports, it's a mathematical construction, a visual created based on the observations of those linked up radio telescopes, with the scientists assigning different color values based on energy observed. This is nothing new. Many of the beautiful depictions we have of distant galaxies and nebulae are created in computers based on data and calculations. It does mean we aren't seeing reality. Some astronomers say that rather than orange-yellow, the ring would actually appear white to the human eye, with some blue and red shading. Still, even with black holes checked off, science allows for belief in dark matter, dark energy, parallel universes, some subatomic particles, and many other forces and objects we human beings cannot, as of yet, actually see. This springs from an underlying, nearly Pythagorean faith in the ability of numbers and mathematics to describe the workings of the universe. Science's belief in these forces it cannot yet see leads them to build modern cathedrals like the Large Hadron Collider to manifest their beliefs and make them real. All the while, scientists deny that this is belief or faith, for they have numbers to back them up, even as they search for the God particle. How different are they from those scientists who in their time used their numbers and their science to raise structures we cannot duplicate today, such as the Gothic cathedrals or the pyramids? Those who raised the Gothic cathedrals applied mathematical principles they believed in. Their metaphors led them to attribute phi, the divine or golden ratio, to the workings of God on the earth. And so, in employing phi in their construction, they emulated the work of the great creator. They too used mathematics and attempted to manifest God in the world. Well before we could create pretty fractals using phi on our computers, these architects managed to instill a sense of grandeur, holiness, and awe by employing the ratio in their creations. There is an element of faith in any human endeavor. There has to be. Because certainty is an illusion. Whatever metaphors we use to cope with the world's basic uncertainty will be human constructs attempting to define the undefinable, the human mind attempting to encompass itself. We label things and build systems to explain the world to ourselves. We have to. The trap is in losing oneself in the metaphor, in convincing oneself the metaphor isn't merely one way of trying to define the ineffable, but the way. Losing the sense of metaphor to that sense of truth and certainty. It is seductive, that certainty. But that same certitude becomes destructive when and if reality begins throwing up things that challenge the faith in that certainty. At best, the certitude leads its believers to ignore and reject any evidence contrary to their belief systems. At worst, it leads to violent suppression of contrary ideas. We need to see our metaphors, all of them, for what they are. Attempts to put labels on and to describe a reality which is actually beyond our complete comprehension. Make no mistake, labeling science and its models and religions and their systems as metaphors is not an attempt to deny the realities to which they point. Those forces and powers they describe are very real. All of them. For science and religion are both the end results of human perceptions described by human minds. All our attempts to explain, encompass, and ultimately control the unseen and seemingly uncontrollable forces at work in the world around us. Recognizing these descriptions and explanations as metaphors doesn't deny that what are being described are real experiences. It merely expresses a doubt, the uncertainty, in the idea that one description, one single set of metaphors, is the one true set of metaphors that truly describes the indescribable. Doubt is not an easy thing to live with, nor is uncertainty, but they are both our birthright. Both words bring forth dark and negative connotations at first glance. The seduction of certainty casts them both in their worst light, their most negative aspect. The warm comfort of certainty sees uncertainty as a threat, sees real danger and doubts very erosion of certainty itself. Yet doubt can lead to questions, which enlighten and inform, and uncertainty can lead to breakthroughs and new knowledge as answers are sought. They drive curiosity and exploration, seeking and creating. Whether in science or religion, the embrace of certainty and its warm, comfortable seduction is threatened by all of these things. Those most entrenched and invested in any system often strike out viciously at any curious or creative questioning of their system, their dogma, and dismiss any searching or explorations outside of boundaries they define. They are, perhaps, correct in their threat assessment. Their system is at risk when it is a metaphor being held up as a truth, a certainty, for if seen for the metaphor it truly is, their worldly power base could evaporate. Can't have that. Doubt and uncertainty can be frightening. They can lead to fear. Our human response to fear is then to seek the warm comfort of certainty. But that's a false security, a false sense of comfort in a stagnant status quo at best. We need to mature as a species to the point where we can bravely embrace existential doubt and uncertainty and claim it as our birthright. Unfortunately, our culture is headed in the opposite direction. In addition to its longtime employment by religion and science, in recent decades, politicians and media outlets discovered the power of fear to drive people into their certainties, the power of fear to make people seek them out for comfort and ease. We are thus surrounded by increasing numbers of alternate systems of metaphors claiming they and only they truly describe our reality. There are ever more systems willing to assure us that they know what is really going on. Lose that doubt and uncertainty and join us. We are in some ways hardwired to respond to this. Fear makes us crave safety and comfort. Yet, employed in this way, that safety, that kind of comfort, is a lie. These systems are only rough approximations, wielded with blunt force for maximum effect. The manufactured outrage and fear that powers these systems is doing real harm to our society, primitivizing and infantilizing our culture, and inhibiting the maturation necessary for the human race to embrace our doubt and uncertainty. The celebration of certainty, this giving in to the seduction of comfortable certitude, leads us into cultural dead ends, societal cul-de-sacs turning back on themselves, which lead us all nowhere. Those entrenched in the power structures of our society's metaphorical systems like it this way. Those wrapped in those systems' illusions of safety and comfort are easily manipulated. The powerful reassure their enwrapped followers that dealing with existential doubt and uncertainty is hard. They'll take care of that. Focus instead on what's important. Get lost in the details of your job, house, family, on consuming more and more of what they say you need. We, the powerful, will deal with that other big stuff. Don't you worry. We'll take care of you and make everything great again. As they adopted the use of fear and the seduction of certainty over the last century, political movements and figures and media creations began offering the kind of safety, warmth, and comfort in their metaphors and certainties once found only in science and religion. And people flocked to these new certainties, as much as the hardcore following or base of any politician, party, or media outlet. The First Church of Elvis, Jedis for Jesus, even Deadheads, offer more colorful illustrations of this same phenomenon. Most frustrating for science was that it now had to contend with many more competing metaphorical systems than just religions. Also dismaying to scientists, it became apparent that for many average people, it wasn't all the scientific facts and mathematical proofs that had won them over to science originally. It was simply that seductive sense of certainty science radiated. Now, other certainties were seducing them away. As other competing certainties arose, science fell back on its own certainties, and disciplines grew dogmatic and resistant to change. In this weakened condition, science became more vulnerable to unseen forces it once denied, often unwilling to address human feelings, dismissing them as unscientific. Science was left unprepared to counter certainties based on feelings, and so was unprepared to deal with, "I feel like your science is wrong." Science had no answer except its old ones, facts and numbers, but these no longer produced the certainty they once did. Though it once enjoyed the authority the cloak of certainty granted it, science did itself no favors playing along in the certainty game, for in many ways, certainty was antithetical to science itself. Science should be about breakthroughs and new knowledge, curiosity and exploration, seeking and creating. These are the good products of doubt and uncertainty, when embraced and not feared. These have always driven science forward, doubt leading to questions which enlighten and inform, and uncertainty to new hypotheses and new answers. The time has come to entertain wild new ideas, to study consciousness, morphic fields, telepathic abilities, and other areas until now marginalized and dismissed, even while they engaged in verifiable, reproducible science. This call to embrace doubt and uncertainty is not a call to live in constant fear or primitive paranoia, but instead a call to recognize the universe for the wonder it truly is, and to understand that on some levels, we can't comprehend it all. Our senses are limited, our perceptions confined. The ability to handle or embrace doubt and uncertainty without fear is a sign of maturation. When we experience things for which our own set of internal references fail to provide context, we must employ metaphors to try to describe the indescribable. That's okay. Just understand that. Understand that that is what we, as humans, do. As for morals and ethics, when we embrace doubt and uncertainty, when we acknowledge and recognize the metaphors for what they are, while respecting the realities they point to, we begin to see a universality emerge from the many variations. A singular theme. Even science's metaphors, especially in quantum theorizing, have been moving in this direction, as subatomic particles demonstrate inexplicable connectivity. We are one, all interconnected. With that knowledge, that reality, shining forth from so many metaphorical systems, it becomes clear that any violence or harm against others is violence and harm to oneself. Morals and ethics proceed naturally from this knowledge. Love, in all its various incarnations, can be seen as observable evidence for this interconnectivity in the world, a recognition of the self in the other, and so much more. Whether we say, "God is love," or describe love as the worldly manifestations of the ground of all being, there are many metaphors describing this essential, universal aspect of consciousness. The fear-driven certainties do not allow for this insight. The very fear that fuels them is created by casting other human beings as others, dehumanizing and demonizing them in order to scare followers into the safety, warmth, and comfort of their certainty. These metaphorical systems that seduce as certainties jealously fear and demonize other certainties as well, as this competitive process creates natural enemies. Those wrapped up in a certainty will defend it as if it is their own life, as its safety, warmth, and comfort becomes personalized, and any threat to the certainty becomes a personal threat. By their very nature, certainties create an us-versus-them mentality in those they seduce. Carried to extremes, this certitude allows for violent righteousness, destructive acts of faith, rooted in the belief of the certain correctness of one's cause. We would all benefit from a great deal less certainty in the world. Doubt and uncertainty seem frightening at first. Embracing them seems perhaps contrary to our instincts toward self-preservation, safety, warmth, and comfort. But these are primitive infantile instincts responding to fear stimuli, and the sense of security provided, illusory. Embracing our doubt and uncertainty allows us to move beyond the comforting metaphors, to confront the wonder of a universe that is still, yet, not wholly describable nor encompassable by the human mind. We must deny the seduction of certainty, or forever remain a race of childish fools led by liars and con artists. We must dare to confront a universe not wholly describable or knowable, and be okay with that. Sure, it can be uncomfortable and somewhat difficult at first to accept doubt and uncertainty as the natural state of things. Existence then requires a bit more thought and work on our part, but it should. Doubt is good. It can lead to new questions. Uncertainty is good. It can lead to new discoveries. But the comfortable, warm, womb-like safety of certainty is ultimately a lie, a retreat from reality. Falling into it, one advances no further, comforted by assurances that all of life's difficult questions can and have been answered. Don't you worry. Here's how things are. This shuts down or controls our wonder, limits us. Resist the allure and the seduction of certainty. Life instead should be met with intelligence and curiosity, exploration, seeking and creating, a never-ending search for new knowledge and answers. Or so it seems. You are, of course, free to doubt any or all of this. I could be wrong. That was the nonfiction piece, The Seduction of Certainty, on Glow in the Dark Radio. What do you think? Something to piss off everyone? Probably. It's, as I said, I hope, an enlightened agnostic outlook. Positive agnosticism. That is out now as an audiobook. Ebook, paperback, just go to Amazon for that. Audible. The Seduction of Certainty. By yours truly, Mike Luoma. Some nonfiction, and some would say fiction, I suppose. I would like to know what you would like to hear next on this podcast, so I hope you will go to glowinthedarkradio.com and click where it says take the survey, and let me know what you'd like to hear. Also be great if you want to support this podcast on Patreon. That's where you can be a subscriber, a patron. Patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. And I am going to collect survey responses over the next week here, and we'll see who we get next week. For now, go take the survey, get a free audiobook, and we'll do this stuff again with science fiction next week, next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.